How many stars out of five?
Oh, we don't do that.
Give stars.
How many of 14? Oh. You got to give it out of 14 stars. How many
sure.
would you give it?
I'd give it 9.
9 out of 14? That's a good rating. That's a good rating.
All right. Let's talk about The Walking Dead.
Nerdappropriate.com.
The Ocho.
Ocho e Ocho.
I don't think that's right.
Muy bien.
How you guys doing? This is a Monday night. It's not our usual recording time. We could not do the weekend. Somebody was out of town, which is okay with us. We spent it with no pants on.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I didn't put pants on this weekend.
We played some games together while Hillary was at a wedding.
We did.
Oh. I had fun.
We visited Mass Effect.
Yeah.
We went back and played some ME3MP.
And it's weird, without Hillary, we all had a pretty even number of kills. I don't know what that means.
I don't know. Did you guys play Platinum?
No. We did not.
No, we didn't. We
What's
barely...
the level below bronze?
We like to play for fun.
Lead. We played lead matches.
I think it was D-bag. D-bag level.
Oh.
Whatever.
What'd we do to you? Jeez.
I thought I was cranky. So nice to you last week. What happened?
I know you were. I'm just cranky because I'm getting sick.
Oh.
Yeah, this flu epidemic.
Are you also cranky due to mixing colors?
I did mix some colors this weekend, and it was bad, bad, bad times.
Good times of that. I told
Sorry.
You.
I know. I didn't take your advice. At least
clear.
I owned up to it.
Yeah, yeah. That's all right. Your Niners won, so at the end of the day.
Woohoo! San Francisco rocks.
Whatever. Kaepernick's a douchebag.
That was not enthusiastic at all.
Let's do the rundown.
Okay, so today on the podcast, we're going to talk about news from CES, which includes the Steam Box, NVIDIA's Project Shield, Razer Edge, and the Microsoft Illuma Room. Did I get that right?
That all sounded like one big word.
The Illuma Room. It's a new dance that I'm learning. We're going to talk about Anarchy Reigns, and then we're going to have a little roundtable discussion about The Walking Dead since we have all finished it.
Yay.
And then in our Inquado, the question is, what woefully overlooked franchise, character, or genre do you think we need to see more of in the future? That's pretty cool too. And so I guess in a way, with The Walking Dead, we're sort of bringing back the open thread, which is exciting.
Yay.
And
Yay.
For those that haven't listened in the past year, because we haven't done an open thread in a year.
I know.
Yeah.
Open thread is kind of an extended discussion. So we're kind of going a little bit lighter on reviews this week because stuff was a little bit, you know, not too many new things came out. So we're going to go ahead and extend our Walking Dead talk. So hopefully you guys like that.
Yeah, it's going to be spoilerific, P.S. If you've not played The Walking Dead, when we get to that segment, there will be spoilers.
We will warn you because I think it's the entire thing will be a spoiler, essentially.
Yeah.
Like our review happened like a few weeks ago. So this is our let's talk about what we did in the game.
Yeah.
For sure. So, Matt, what have you been up to? How was your weekend?
My weekend was good. It was pretty relaxed. I didn't go anywhere. I just stayed home, watched football.
We like to watch
Mass
the football.
With you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt.
It's playoff season. So.
And the Niners won.
The Niners won. I'm fine with the Niners as a team. I can't stand Colin Kaepernick. He's
it's the soul patch, right? It's that little chin.
He just seems like a douchebag.
Chin dude.
He's like that guy I hated in high school, but yeah, he's like a famous quarterback now or something. I can't stand him.
Oh, that's okay.
So I would just like to say in the first few minutes of this podcast, how many times have we used the word douchebag or D-bag?
Many Already. Times.
A couple Any. Of times.
Already.
Okay. We're going to fit it in as much as we can, probably.
It's played out.
All right, cool.
But she said.
Sounds good.
And then I played a bunch of Walking Dead because I had to finish it. I was the one that was woefully behind the three of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I did throw my controller a couple times, but we'll get into that in the review. So
All right.
That was about it. It was pretty light week for me. How about you, Ash? What have you been doing?
I had a good weekend. I hung out, did some stuff around the house. We actually rearranged one of the rooms in my house a lot, so that was kind of fun. Not fun was rewiring all of my tech in the living room, which took like many, many hours. Did all the speakers over and moved everything around. So that was kind of a pain in the ass. In terms of game playing, I played some Mass Effect with you guys, which was a lot of fun. And I did some more Far Cry 3.
Far Cry 3.
Thank you very much. Will you just say the rest of it for me?
Yes, you played Far Cry 3 and you liked it a lot.
Yes, multiplayer co-op is what I played. So I did that and that was a lot of fun. Played a little bit more Rad Soldiers actually on the old iPad.
Nice.
Which is, I'm really enjoying that. It's a lot of fun. It's kind of scratching that strategy itch that I constantly have. So if you like turn-based strategy, Rad Soldiers, it's really good. What else? Watched Iron Sky, which is a movie about space Nazis.
How was it? I think I saw that in the store.
It's on Netflix right now. Yeah? It's pretty awesome. It just came out last year. So if you're looking for a film about space Nazis, then there you go. The premise is awesome. It's at the end of World War II, 1945, the Nazis realize they're losing, and so they launch an expedition up into space, and they hide on the dark side of the moon until it's safe, and then they build all this like super high tech stuff.
Until it's safe for what?
For them to invade Earth, and it just so happens that now is the time to invade Earth. So they have all this crazy like super Nazi technology. It opens with men walking on the moon doing like, you know, the spacewalk, and then Nazis show up on the moon while they're doing the spacewalk and shoot them with like STG-44s and stuff.
Wow.
Wow.
It is amazing. So definitely watch Iron Sky. It's amazing. And other than that, just, you know, hanging out, having a good time. It's been a good week.
That reminded me, I watched Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
That's on Netflix as well.
That is about all I send you.
Really?
Go ahead. Yeah. I mean, it was fun. It was like a Mission Impossible movie. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Hmm.
So, that's Scott, how about you?
I don't know. I guess I'm in the routine right now. Work has been really awfully busy, unfortunately. So, when I do have time to game, I've been playing Assassin's Creed 3. And just like last week, I'm still collecting feathers and trinkets and treasure chests.
Killing me with that.
Dude, I can't help it. It's my jam. That's what I like to do. But it's actually making me like the game better. And like I said, the only thing I really hate is climbing a tree to get like a synchronization point, like those trees.
The ones are horrible.
Yeah, there's something weird.
They're really hard.
There's something weird about climbing them. It's like it's weird and buggy. But like I said, you know, like I appreciate all the new stuff in the game. So that's exciting. And then today at work, I showed somebody FTL and he's totally hooked. So I feel good about that.
Is it Dave?
No, it was Joe for you guys.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're FTL evangelizer.
Oh, yeah. Because it's just that good. Oh, and I watched two episodes of Girls because my wife likes that show.
The old season?
Yeah, the original, the first season.
Nice.
Was it
shocking?
I'm not a girl, so I don't know. I don't really relate, but
it is kind of aimed at a certain.
I find it interesting, I guess. It is a TV show
It's well written, it's well acted.
Yes.
It is super well written. It's super
well
acted.
That is factually correct. Right.
She just Lena Dunham won a Golden Globe last night.
Did
she
win?
Yeah, for Girls.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch the Golden Globes because I was at a wedding.
I didn't watch them either, but
Twitter told me
Golden Globes.
Yeah.
It seemed like the wedding consumed your entire weekend. Is that true?
Yeah, so I drove down to LA Saturday. And then spent the night at a friend's house. And then Sunday was all about the wedding. So it was actually really fun. It was set in a center of arts, and it was pretty much dressed up like a library, and it had like a lot of vintage decorations, and it was a pretty small crowd, about 50 people. It was really fun. I mean, it was good to see, you know, people that I've known for a while, and I met some new friends, which is really cool. I was at a really awesome table of folks.
Awesome.
So I got to meet Chloe Dykstra and this this chick named Drea, who's like a doctor of psychology and a cosplayer. So we had some really cool discussions about geek girls and cosplay, and it was really, really fun.
Awesome.
So overall, great wedding.
Sounds like you stayed out of trouble this weekend.
Almost. I got pulled over for speeding on my way home. It's really tough, you know, it's like a 6-hour drive. And I left LA about 6 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock at night and had to drive back up the 5. So yeah, I was speeding a little bit, but the officer was nice enough to let me out of the ticket. So
nice.
I thought you were about to launch into like a Californians and tell us how you got home from the
and then I was on the 4 or 5.
I took the 134 to the 5 to the 152 to the 85. Yeah, that's actually how it went.
I thought I was the only one that didn't understand what the hell they were saying, and I just kind of like always just nodded like, oh yeah, I totally know those roads.
Yeah,
it's like that SNL skit, right?
I don't know.
The California.
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Oh boy.
So I also, I also read a book, which is also pretty fun.
Oh cool.
I did some kind of creative type thing. So it's a book.
What'd you read?
It's a book by Kira Cass called The Siren. I would definitely recommend picking it up because it's only like 99 cents on Kindle. So it's one of her first books. She's a really great YA author. If you're interested in sirens, as in like the mythical creature that calls people to their death, go pick it up.
You should recommend it in our Goodreads group.
Oh, God, we need to get that to be active.
Goodreads, nerd appropriate.
I'm horribly not good at keeping that thing active.
Yeah, that's okay.
You know what I keep getting recommended that I have not? I don't know if you guys have read it, is Ready Player One. Has anybody read that?
No.
I keep getting recommended it. It's kind of like a weird future sci-fi book about gaming, and I have not read it yet. So
the last book I
was able
to
do that.
Yeah, I was able to read Robopocalypse, which I would also recommend.
That one, someone else has recommended that to me too.
They're gonna make a movie out of it.
Spielberg's doing it.
Yeah.
News.
So speaking of tech.
Good. Yeah.
Sort of tech. So CES happened this week, which is pretty fantastic in Vegas. And there were a lot of cool updates that happened and a lot of cool new tech that was announced. But the number one thing that I feel like people are talking about is the Steam Box. So I think that's actually first on our list of news. So
it is.
Yeah. So what do you guys think about the Steam Box?
Well, I don't know if you guys saw, but basically what came out of what was interesting about CES is that there weren't really any big gaming companies doing their own kind of panels or anything there. But Steam actually had a big presence with kind of third-party ideas or prototypes for the Steam Box. Mm-hmm. They had an Alienware one. I think they had an HP one. And then one of the more interesting ones was one called the Piston. And I don't know if you guys saw these different prototypes, but basically the way I think Engadget reported it was that they were just trying to show off different form factors for what the Steam Box could be in your living room.
Okay.
This is not necessarily that they are the only one they've invested in with their own capital is the Piston, which if you guys haven't heard, is basically like a...
it's like a square.
How to describe it? I mean, it looks awesome. It's this little, like, it looks like the casing for a piston in an engine, essentially. But whatever that might be called, I clearly do not know engines and cars very well. But it's interchangeable. So, like, if let's say a new graphics card came out or a new RAM that you wanted to put in, you could, like, basically pull a piece of the PC out, put a new piece of the PC in, and then, like, send it off for credit towards your purchase and things like that. It's this like ever-changing box that can kind of always be up to date with whatever the tech is.
It looks really small. It looks like you'd be buying those parts directly from
from Piston.
They'd be proprietary.
Yeah, they're totally proprietary. Mm. And on top of that, they are super low power, supposedly really low heat, very quiet, you know, kind of PC in the living room box. This is all based off of Steam's big screen. If anybody, I messed with it. I don't remember if anybody else did on the podcast, but it's their new kind of TV interface with a controller in the hand. I don't know. These were all priced from what I've been hearing anywhere from about $1,000 to $2,000. I think the Piston might have come in a little bit cheaper than that. I don't remember if they had any actual pricing on it.
I mean, there's really just one thing that I honestly find confusing about this, and like, that is, what is the difference between getting a Piston and then just building like a media center PC and putting that in your living room?
I don't think there is any. I mean, I think, isn't the Steam Box going to be literally, like, Valve is going to be manufacturing these, correct?
Right. So I think what the Steam Box guarantees is what a console guarantees. Yeah. Is here's a box that Valve says, hey, we've tested every single game that comes through Steam that you can install on this thing on this box, and it'll work right out of the box. You just buy it from us, and everything will play. You don't have to worry about anything. I think that's the real key behind Steam Box.
So I'm still confused with this kind of motion that Steam is kind of going in this direction, because it's directly competing with consoles now. So my whole thing is, I know that Steam is like a widely recognized and highly respected marketplace, but I still don't understand, aside from the fact that people get games for cheap during Steam sales, I don't understand the lure. Like, why would I be, why as
Let
a, like a Microsoft
junkie? Let me answer
this
one, because I thought about this long and hard. The answer is modability. Not necessarily modability of the hardware, but the fact that you can mod and add all sorts of bells and whistles to your software on a PC, which you cannot do on a console. I mean, if you wanted
Naked Skyrim,
you could do Naked Skyrim, but if you would never ever see Naked Skyrim on a PS3 or Xbox.
I mean, like,
the only bummer that I've heard right now is that it's supposedly going to run Linux, which could handicap what games it plays. But I think that's something that Valve is probably working very hard and fast on making work. You know, if they
support. Right.
So also, though, in gaming prototypes, gaming kind of hardware, we have NVIDIA's Project Shield and Razer's Edge. Did you guys see these two things?
I did, actually, thanks to Techzilla.
The
Razer's Edge. This is the one I spent more time with. So.
Okay. The Razer Edge is a $1,000 to $1,200, essentially convertible tablet PC, right?
Yeah.
That can play just about anything.
Yeah,
it looks ridiculous. But this is akin more to a traditional laptop, but in a much more portable flavor. It's preloaded. You can do Steam on it, right? And most PC games. And I think it also
it runs Windows 8 right now, which is
it Windows 8? Okay,
it was running Windows 8. I think it essentially had all the horsepower of a modern gaming rig, but in a tablet, which seems ridiculous. It had like 8 gigs of RAM and like a nice NVIDIA graphics card on it. And they showed the demo I saw. By the way, the CEO of Razer is like, he looks like he's 30 years old. It's ridiculous. I'm so jealous. He's like this 30-year-old Asian dude. He's like, yeah, check out what I built. I'm like, oh my God, you're so rich. But anyway. So they were showing Dishonored on this tablet, and first thing that he did that really kind of made my jaw kind of pop open for a second was he attached all this crap. So he flipped it up, attached a keyboard to it, and then all of a sudden, within like a couple seconds, the tablet looked more like a PC, and they were playing Dishonored on it, and it worked fine. And it also has attachable controllers to where you can actually have dual analog sticks on each side of the tablet, if that makes any sense, along with your buttons and your D-pad. So it almost turns the entire tablet into like a massive
Wii U controller.
Yeah, a massive Game Boy, right?
Yeah.
Which was also kind of cool. So, I mean, it's definitely innovative. It's definitely cool, but I don't know how functional it would actually be.
I thought the controller attachment was one of the cool things too, is that it basically converts a 9-point-something-inch tablet into a playable thing with controls, which is always what my complaint is about on-screen controls with the iPad or the Nexus or anything like that. Very hard to use, and this seems to make it pretty usable.
Okay, I was going to say the problem with something like that is it's going to get really hot, you know, if you're playing games on something that small. The thing that's neat is it has a solid-state hard drive, so you don't have to worry about jostling it. You know, it's not like a laptop. It's meant to be kind of carried around and moved around like a tablet. So the Razer's Edge seems really innovative, and $1,000 really isn't that bad for a tablet that you can actually game on if you really, really want it to.
It's what the Surface Pro costs. So, I mean, if you're going to drop $1,000 on a Windows 8 tablet that can do things, the Razer's Edge might be more enticing than the Surface Pro, honestly.
Yeah. All the peripherals, though, like the controller and the keyboard and all that stuff, they're all relatively expensive, between
like
$200.
They're like $200. So NVIDIA's Project Shield differed a little bit. This is a sort of the Wii U tablet for PC gaming. This is NVIDIA's controller with like a flip top. I think it's a 5-inch screen or 6-inch screen. It's not huge, it's small. But it is, I think, a higher def. Excuse me. By itself, on its own, as an individual device, this is an Android-based unit, like the Ouya would be or something like that. It'll be kind of a gaming machine built on Android. But what you can do is actually hook it up to your local network and play games off of your computer or stream them directly to your TV and use it as a controller, streaming basically high-quality games, whatever your Dishonored or whatever that might be, somehow. And I don't know the tech on this, from your network to the controller to the TV, essentially.
So weird.
This is confusing.
Yeah, Project Shield confused the living crap out of me. And plus, it looks like a piece of like alien technology that you'd find crashed you up.
Yeah, as far as looks go, it was the least attractive thing I've seen come out of CES. But I thought the concept of it being what Nintendo's doing with the Wii U on a more powerful PC game type. It sounds like on live, but on your local network. So supposedly probably minus the lag and things like that. You should be able to play it at a relatively fast speed. But
so basically this controller will stream games from your computer and then you hook it up with HDMI to your TV and you can play the game on the TV?
Yeah, with this NVIDIA controller. Or let's say then your wife walks in the room, says, I'm gonna watch Vampire Diaries, and you go, okay,
hey now,
wife,
right?
then you just flick the controller screen open, and you can continue gaming on the controller.
So okay,
as if nothing happened.
Why is that cool for this, but stupid for the Wii U?
I never said it was stupid for the Wii U. So don't,
I did.
Don't
love me in
I that.
I think this
game
is stupid too.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
I don't get it. I don't understand the purpose of it. Like I've never been at the point where like I need to stream this on something that's not the thing that I'm like I don't understand.
I think we just learned that Ash doesn't take poops.
I don't.
Just wanted to make sure that the similarities between these two particular products and the Wii U is very clear.
Yeah, of course. Okay. This is the Wii U on PC.
Interesting.
Interesting.
I mean, that's essentially what they're saying here, except it also has Android. So if you wanted to throw the ugliest, most least portable gaming thing in your bag and take it with you, you could feasibly play Android games somewhere else with this hideous piece of work. But hey, whatever. Each their own on that.
But I mean, at this point, these are all really just prototypes, and there's no guarantee that these products will ever actually make it to market, maybe with the exception of
Razor's Edge is for sale. Yeah, Razor's Edge is for sale. Like you can do that now, and it's a pretty awesome looking thing. So if you were looking for like a portable gaming rig, I think the Razor Edge, if you wanted to spend that kind of money, is pretty awesome looking. I mean, it's hard to argue. The NVIDIA Project Shield, I think, is an interesting concept. I agree. I don't know how many times I would flick open the controller and play like on a 5-inch screen as compared to my 40, whatever inch screen.
Right.
But like at the same time, being able to walk out, pick up an NVIDIA controller, turn it on, and have games streaming from my gaming rig to the TV is more interesting, which is the same reason this box is interesting.
I think it's a cool concept. I agree.
So, and then the last bit of CES news was really, as Microsoft has tend to do, they put out these amazing tech demos that may never see the light of day, but they put out a new one, and it's called Illumiroom. They did it alongside of Samsung, I believe. And basically somebody fires up an Xbox and it is the Kinect mixed with a TV that has like a backwards projector and a Xbox. And he starts playing games, and as he starts playing, the whole room lights up with the screen, like projects like a screen back behind the TV, essentially, that then shifts with your perspective as you're kind of moving and playing in the game. And
I'm in.
It is awesome looking. like, no lies, I would be totally down to play a game like this.
I'm so down. That's awesome.
Probably never happen. Although everybody's saying like, ooh, is this the Xbox 720? Is this what's going to happen? I really doubt it, but you never know. It is pretty cool though. So
yeah, it's a cool concept.
We'll link up. They do this all the time though, Scott. They put out these like like we talked about earlier, the Surface was a thing in Microsoft for years. And what it was this table-sized computer that had a touch screen, that had like super multi-touch touch screen on the top of it, that people would play D&D on. They would do, you know, like you could have, you know, your family's, you know, financial stuff and be doing budgets on it. And like all this, like it's just an awesome concept. And I think they sold three of them. And then that was like, never did anything.
And now
else
it's called
it.
The Pixel Sense.
Yeah. Now it's got a new name, but I have a feeling this is going to go the way of that, but it is a pretty awesome concept. So we'll try to link that up too and give it a look, but it's called the Microsoft Illuma Room. It's a really neat, there's a YouTube video out that shows the whole demo and it's pretty awesome looking.
We're one step closer to the holodeck.
Seriously.
Or Fahrenheit 451.
I think the coolest thing is that it doesn't just project. It kind of like the Kinect knows where you are, so it kind of interacts with you due to the Kinect. You know what I mean? Like that's a pretty awesome thing. So yeah.
I like it.
Well, do you guys want to take a quick break and come back for our long-winded discussion about Walking Dead and a review about Anarchy Reigns?
Yes, yeah. Sir.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to do a quick review of Anarchy Reigns and then move on to a long, spoiler-filled discussion about Telltale's Walking Dead. So let me start off by asking you guys, do you know anything about Anarchy Reigns?
Yeah, I watched...
Other than what I taught you last week.
I watched some videos on it, and it kind of looked like a weird Japanese manga wet dream with fighting.
That's...
That sounds right up Ash's alley.
I watched the videos too, and I couldn't even like figure out what the game, like what it was about.
I did appreciate the very stereotypical black character that they had. That was pretty nice.
Oh yeah, there is. Yeah, he's what's his name? I'll think of his name in a minute.
His name's like Pimp Daddy or something.
Oh, no.
It's pretty incredible. But so Anarchy Reigns is by Platinum Games, who did Bayonetta and who did Vanquish. They're working on Metal Gear Rising Revengeance right now, and of course they're working on Bayonetta 2, which is going to be a Wii exclusive. And you know they're good at what they do, and this was supposed to be a multiplayer arena style massive brawler of a game, meaning that you would be able to have over a dozen different players in one gigantic map, essentially all fighting at the exact same time. So think of it like Street Fighter, but with like 20 people as opposed to one-on-one, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what the concept of Anarchy Reigns was really supposed to be. Quickly, the single player is really different because you start off on these wide open maps and you actually have to kill like a certain number of like minion, like kind of scrub characters in order to advance the story. And then you'll go on and fight boss characters and things of that nature and do different challenges, similar to how in Street Fighter you'd have to punch the car and things like that. Well, these are a little bit more involved. You might have to do like a challenge where you hang from a helicopter and shoot a Gatling gun, or a challenge where you race around on a flying hovercraft shooting fireballs.
This kind of sounds like it's all over the place.
It is literally all over the place. And that's why it's so hard to explain really what this game is. I guess at its core, it's a third-person brawling game. Okay. Combat is fairly straightforward. There's only a light punch and a hard punch, and then you hold down the left trigger, and then you can use your abilities, but superpowered style. So you'd have a light super and a heavy super.
That seems so weird considering like how detailed Bayonetta was, you know, right, in terms of the combos and the moves and the items and the weapons.
That's kind of what I was expecting this to be, especially considering since Bayonetta is in this game. I was expecting a real incredibly detailed fighting system, and it's just, unfortunately, it's not here. So while it's fun to play, there aren't there aren't that many moves at all. And you can't, like, one of the biggest things about Bayonetta was being able to like counter abilities and actually the precision of combat down, which is what made it so fun. And this is really as button mashy as you can get. There's a little bit of tact, of course, to it, but not a whole lot.
Does it have any like multiplayer or co-op? Can you brawl it up like with your buds?
Yeah, so there's a gosh, there's more modes than I can.
Why is that so funny?
There's
just the alliteration in that was hilarious.
Oh,
throw it up with your buds.
Yeah,
your bros, whatever.
This is gonna sound ridiculous, but I think there's over a dozen different modes.
What?
A dozen different gameplay modes on top of the campaign mode. And one of them that I actually did try online was the co-op sort of horde style. So you and two of your friends can fight against waves of increasingly difficult enemies.
Okay.
And this is actually a lot of fun. There are, you know, you can do like co-op team up attacks and actually work together and like do group body slams and things like that. But the problem, I'm going to be honest, I feel like this game was never finished. It has so much potential, and it tried to be so incredibly innovative. I mean, you have these long, incredibly massive, sprawling levels of like multiple tiers where you climb up like these giant buildings, and you know, jump on air jets and fight all these monsters and stuff. But then I feel like they started working on this game and then got sidetracked with other projects and didn't actually finish it. And a great example of why is like a lot of the menus in the game. And I was telling you guys this earlier.
Yeah, tell me about the choice of fonts in this game, because we never really talk about that on this podcast.
And the intro to the game is like, looks like a VGA like or EGA graphic of like some splash screen. There's literally linked text that's like 14 point font that tells the backstory of like what the unit is. Just scrolling. And you're like, what? This is the intro to the game? No, like intro cinematic or anything of that nature. Just literally a still picture with scrolling 14 point font. And I'm just like, okay, that's weird. The menu system is also like, you know, probably 18 point Arial font, just like menus, you know, story, campaign, like, and that's pretty much it in terms of the menus.
But the price is right?
Yeah, so the price brand new is $30 right now. And the thing that's unfortunate is the game, like I said earlier, had so much potential to be something really, really great. It tried to be so many things at the same time. There's literally no other game like it on the planet, which I admire. I think that's a great idea for them to try and do something new. But the thing that this game needed to be great was a really, really tight fighting system, which it does not have.
Would you describe it as pure anarchy?
It is pure anarchy. It's total, it's maximum anarchy. Oh, the last thing I want to say about this is the soundtrack is fucking incredible. It's like somebody took, like really insane hip hop and injected it with epinephrine.
So is it all like J-popped up like the Bayonetta soundtrack was, or is it something different?
Oh, it's fucking crazy, super speed, super fast hip hop, like Outkast style, but about the game.
They must have somebody over there at Platinum Games on staff who just re-records all these songs and creates like new lyrics for them, you know, because that's what Bayonetta had too.
I absolutely love the soundtrack. I think it's amazing. So
I think this brings up a question, though, just a brief one that I want to ask is does it. I kind of appreciate that this is a $30 game. Like,
yep.
It doesn't bother me that they put out a game that they're like, hey, look, this is not a AAA game. This is a game that we spent X amount of time on and we got it out and it's called Anarchy Reigns and you may like it. It's a brawler. You know what I mean? Like, instead of like every game being $60.
No, I agree with that. I think there should be $30 games and there should be $60 games. And this game, to be perfectly honest, is worth $30. I've already... the game is actually pretty long. It has a fairly decent story. There's some really cool cinematics in there. There's a lot to it, and I agree. I think for $30, it's worth it. I mean,
awesome.
It has its faults, but you know, $30 game is great. So
ranks right up there with Earth Defense Insect Invasion Force game.
I was actually,
shooter.
That was better than that.
No, that was like $20. I think that was a $20 game.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get real here. So Matt finished The Walking Dead.
I did, yay.
And
finally.
Yeah.
I know, seriously.
How did that make you feel when you finished it?
Like literally the ending moments of the game, or how did it feel to finish Walking Dead?
Just maybe like your experience of just playing the game. Because I knew that you were just kind of like, at times you were trying to catch up and you felt like you were just like plowing through it. Yeah.
So I experienced, and I actually did a little research on this today, and I felt better about it after doing research, but it was buggy, like with a capital B for me. I played off the disc on Xbox.
To be fair, I heard the disc version is in fact buggy compared to the non-disc version.
And pretty much what they've done is if you take a picture, like Telltale has said, if you take a picture, I don't know if this deal's still going, but if you take a picture of the disc, like of the case, next to your Xbox and your TV with you holding it, and I think you have to have your gamer tag somewhere on the screen or something, they will send you a download copy of the game so that you can play through it without the bugginess. But
wow.
I mean, it was pretty bad, guys. Like, it was like vocal glitches where things would repeat themselves, and like there was tons of lag when I was trying to hit buttons. So like, would die a lot for stupid shit. Like the game would load up and then I couldn't move the cursor, and then the cursor would pop in and then the zombie would be on top of me. Like, it was like, it was hard. It made it not fun to play.
That's important.
So that aside, or can you not cast that aside?
I mean, it's hard to, I just wish they hadn't put a disc version out, honestly. I mean, okay. Like, if that's the issue, then just don't put it on disc. I understand why they did, because they wanted to reach that kind of like GameStop market. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's a viable place to do that kind of thing. But I mean, otherwise, I found it is a very well written story, and we'll get into that. But it is an extremely well written story. It is definitely enthralling when you're playing. I just don't love games that stress me out, and that's pretty much, this game is just designed to stress you the fuck out.
I think we talked about that last week with
Dead Space. Yeah. I don't like playing Dead Space because I just get stressed, and it just like, I have stress in my life. I don't need to simulate stress on TV when I'm playing. Like,
yeah, it's true.
It's just like, it's not a thing that I get into in a super way. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed it for the narrative. But I don't necessarily know that the story points or the gameplay necessarily like hit 100% with me. I don't think that I can consider this game of the year. I can consider it a very good game of the year. but it's hard for me to look at it and be like, this beat every other game that came out this year as like the experience to have. Now, that being said, there are tons of stuff which we're going to get into in the open thread that I think they innovated on and did an amazing freaking job at doing. It just, for me personally, did not hit on all the right notes for me to be like, walk away with like, oh, that was like, it was such a great, you know, experience. It was like an experience. Right. It was super stressful. It bummed me the fuck out the entire time, which is a good story. It's a sign of a good story, but I don't know if that's making
sense. It's not what you're looking for in gaming. Is what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
It totally makes sense.
I loved reading Cormac McCarthy's The Road. I have zero desire to ever play a game about the book The Road. it is a horribly depressing, awful experience to feel like I would want to have, and I don't want to have that experience because I would rather not have it. You know
Fair
what I mean?
Enough.
So,
Terminal Disease, the game. It's like, I don't like this.
Well, I think the last person to finish the game before Matt that has not had a chance to talk about it was Hillary. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, I did. I finished it actually in one night.
Oh my God.
Wow. Yeah, it was pretty addictive. And it was one of the, at first I wasn't really into the graphics. You know what I mean? I wanted something more, but I think the choices were so hard. And I think there was such a strong amount of urgency to be, you pretty much have to choose, and a lot of times it's timed, and that actually got me really into the game. Like, I don't know, it felt like it drew me in just because you couldn't just, you know, put your controller down, walk away, and then jump back in because mm-hmm. it's dialogue again. So I don't know, I liked it, and I actually, you know, it did touch upon some things, and I absolutely had feelings at the end, and overall I thought it was a really good game. I agree with Matt that I don't believe that it's game of the year, but that's only because when I think game of the year, I think like all the bells and whistles. Like, I want like super massive experience, like huge game. And this is a great game, but it's not a huge game, you know?
You know what's interesting to me about it is that I think if I had played it as a downloaded title, I may feel slightly different about it. But it's, I'm telling you, Ash, I know you played as a downloaded title. Yeah. It is hard to play through that game on disc and walk away being like, that's a polished game. It's like you get away from it. Like, good Lord. Like, what the hell did I just do? Like,
I know you can't answer this question, but how do you think you would have liked the game if you did not know that it was the game of the year?
I don't think that really affected me that much, honestly. I think I expected a little bit more out of the manipulation of the narrative, if that makes sense.
I understand. But
not necessarily. The game of the year stuff was just interesting to me as a side note. Like, it was like, okay, this one, let's see what the hype's about. But I didn't really, I don't put a lot of stock in game of the year stuff anyways, but I just was like, okay, let me check it out. The disc stuff was really what hit it more than anything else. It wasn't. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, I think playing it in an episodic fashion really did a service, because I think about times where I've watched episodic television and it's kind of like this building momentum. And I'll use Lost as an example. The Lost. First couple of seasons of Lost, I was watching them every single week, you know, as they aired, and like you know, the amount of excitement as we were watching that, it just built and built and built. And I think that's one thing that Telltale did really well with this. By the time the last episode, the last episode was published of The Walking Dead, it could have probably been Lee and like Clementine fishing and like talking. And I would have been like, that's the best, most brilliant thing ever. Like, you know, I was just such a fan of those characters after, you know, building them up in my own eyes after, you know, 5-6 months of waiting. So
I think Clementine, bar none, one of the best characters ever written.
She's great, isn't she?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that it's weird because I think children are both the hardest and the easiest thing to write, because it's like they're hard because if you don't hit the note right, like if you don't really nail what it's like to hang out with a kid or like, you know, what a child sees, like the kind of the lens that a child sees the world through. If you don't nail that, it feels really false and it just comes off as crappy and it's not good. But if you do, it's like, I feel like it's just, it's so easy to make that a character that you want to interact with. You know what I mean? Like, 'cause it's, they see things differently and they interact with things differently. And it's like, when they say shit, you're just like, oh, like it kind of snaps you out of that like gamer mode of being like, oh, I'm a, you know, 30-year-old guy. I'm just going to fuck everyone. I'll do whatever I want. And then it's like a little kid's like, are you really going to take everyone. That stuff? Like, you know, are you really going to take that stuff? And then you're like, oh, shit. No, yeah. I guess I shouldn't take that stuff.
You know, like, she's kind
I guess
of
it depends on who
compass,
you,
right?
How you played.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're Hillary and you hate humanity, apparently, then you can do it.
So, no, it's survival of the fittest, man. Survival of the fittest.
Oh, my God.
All right,
I think we're about to learn a lot about each other, or at
Scott,
least our listeners.
Back on the rails.
Yeah. So let's see. Okay, let's start with one that's very controversial. Did you save Doug or Carly in episode one? Ash.
Well, I chose Carly because she's a foxy newscaster who knows how to use a gun.
God.
That is the correct answer. Matt, who did you choose?
Doug, because he can do shit. He's smart. Why do I want a girl who can talk into a microphone? Doug is a smart person. I do have a question about this. I have a serious question about this. In episode two, does Carly... So Doug rigs up an alarm system. Does that exist in the game if Doug's not there?
No.
I don't
it
think
does
so.
Not.
No.
Wow. Okay. So he does do important stuff.
I think there's more battery jokes later in the game if you save Carly.
Yeah.
Well, Doug rigs up, like in episode two when you're in the motel, Doug rigs up a whole like bell alarm system that like warns you when people are coming up and you get like a jump on stuff. I don't know if it really affects.
In episode two, Carly shoots fuckers in the head.
It's true.
But Doug won't handle a gun. That's the only difference. Doug.
She starts to become like a potential love interest, I think.
Yeah.
By the way, can I please point out how ridiculous this string of words is? Knows your past, attractive, can handle a gun.
Or Doug.
As compared to Doug, doesn't know you. IT guy.
Oh, IT guy. Womp womp.
Yeah. Marked for death.
Doug is the smarter thing. Everybody who joined me with Doug is the smart person. Everybody who chose Carly is just being led by their testicles. That's all there is.
Hey, no, I don't have testicles, and I still chose Carly.
As far as we know.
Oh, my God. Oh, and for the record, like 75% of the community chose Carly.
Of course they did.
Yeah. A group member has a heart attack. He could be dead. Do you make sure he stays down or try to save him? This is the scene in the when you're stuck in like the freezer or like the in that back room and there's a salt lick and you need to figure out what to do about Larry, who basically treats you like a fucking asshole for his entire stint in the game.
And this is amazing. Yep. Just before we answer, 68% of the community tried to save Larry, who was the ultimate video game asshole. Like, this character was written to just be the worst human possible. Mm-hmm. And I tried to save him too, but I fucking hated him.
And I was like, are you serious? Well, what did Hillary do?
Hillary's the only one who kills him.
I totally killed him.
Uh-huh.
He was the worst.
This is one of those where it being a video game, I would like to think informs your decision. Do you know what I mean? Like,
informs Hillary's decision or our decision?
A serial killer?
I do not think that Hillary in real life, no matter how much she hated somebody, would take a salt lick to some dude's head that's trying to be revived right now.
If he's going
to
turn into a zombie and kill me, absolutely.
I never want to be locked in a room with Hillary.
This is the fallacy of the Walking Dead universe that always gets me. You're in a room, there's five of you in a room with one guy who's going to turn into the slowest moving zombie ever existing in the world. And instead of giving him a chance to live, you're going to kill him immediately.
He's already dead.
Based off the fact that he may come back, you'll still have plenty of time to kill him at any point in time. Yeah.
Okay, so the thing is that he's a total jerk to me. I've had to run errands for him to save his life before. He's going to continue to have these heart problems. We're on the run. He might turn and kill me. Like, there aren't a lot of things that are weighing in his favor right now.
That's true.
She's a Crawford. That's all I got to say.
Ooh.
Well, okay, well, let's... Maybe we could give Hillary a chance to redeem herself. Because when you discover vital supplies in a car that appears to have been abandoned, do you take what you need or choose to leave what isn't yours, Hillary?
I totally took it. I can't believe that anyone would leave that.
I left the supplies.
Like, why would you do that?
Because.
You're starving.
Clementine. 100%.
Yes, but Clementine also needs to learn. And you have a nice conversation with her afterward where she like puts on the sweatshirt and all of that stuff. She's cold, and now she's not cold. You're trying to take care of Clementine.
But think of the repercussions of your actions. It does come back to haunt you. I never thought it would.
I tell you guys a quick story about video gaming in general?
Yes.
I always have a couple of rules when I play video games. Two come to mind. One is that when there's a fork in the road, I always go left. And the other rule comes from something I learned from the Goonies, right? And this is a perfect example of this. And Matt, I don't know if you remember this, but something that we used to always talk about with Adam is Willy's Gold, you know, One-Eyed Willy.
Yeah.
Love that movie.
Right? So these vital supplies in the car, that's Willy's Gold. You don't touch that, because as soon as you touch it, that's what makes like the pendulum swing on the scale, which then like sets everything ablaze. And all of a sudden, like the ship starts moving, and that's when all the bad stuff happens. So the supplies in the car, that's Willy's Gold. You don't touch that.
The thing is, had Willy's Gold not been touched, the end of the movie where you see the ship sailing away in the sunset, that would have never happened.
Yeah, I know, but it wasn't the kids that took Willy's Gold.
It doesn't matter. Awesome analogy.
It was the crotchety old woman who reached in and stole Willy's Gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what obliterated everything.
Nice.
No, because she still had jewels in her pocket.
Guys, let's explain it to her. Hillary, what you don't know is if you didn't take the supplies, the army shows up 15 minutes later and wipes out all of the zombies, and you live in happiness with all the other characters. Everybody's alive and good.
The game actually ends at the end of episode two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-uh. That's why Matt finished it so quickly.
Anyway, we had food, we had warmth, and we went on our merry way.
So here's the thing. Everybody takes the food and stuff anyways and gives it to Clementine anyways. You made the moral decision not to take it. That's the only thing. The thing is, the game, which is, I think, both the most brilliant and I think possibly disappointing to some people, thing that it does is that every decision you make is barely a decision you made. Like, they're still telling you whatever story they wanted to tell you. They just made you feel like you had a significant stake in the story as it goes. You know what I mean?
There are elements of the narrative that do change, but it's never significant enough. It's like, oh, now you're not at the motel anymore. I mean, because that would just cost way too much for them to do. So
here's the thing that you have to think about too. So if you don't teach Clementine that you take what you need, if for some reason you're not around and she has to fend for herself, don't you want her to be like able to
live this later in the game.
Yeah, but don't you want her to be able to like have survival skills?
No, I see your point. I see your point.
Sure, but maybe 2 days in, when you don't know what the hell's going on, you don't steal other people's stuff just because you feel like you should.
The world is over. There's flesh-eating zombies. It's the end of the. Dude, it's time to throw out all the morals that you used to live by and create a new set.
Crawford.
Okay, so one group member kills another in cold blood. Do you leave the killer to her fate or take her with you?
So did she kill Carly in your guy's story?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so it's the same person either way. It's Doug or Carly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty Which fucking dramatic, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Dude, I was shocked.
I left her ass.
It reminded me of Lost, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's true. Just kind of out of the blue, you're like, wait a second.
You're like, Michael, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Yeah.
So wait, Scott and Ash, what'd you do?
I left Lily on the side of the road because I was kind of like, well, what do I do? Like, I can't kill her. I mean, I should have killed her, but I couldn't because I liked her character. I'm like, she was trying really hard to be a leader and she was kind of unraveling. And it just escalated so quickly during that scene. I thought that was really, really well written and really shocking because I don't know how they built up Doug, but they really built up Carly to be one of the most major characters in the series. Mm-hmm. And to have her just, you know, instantly wiped out of the storyline, I was kind of like, well, fuck, where can this look, go?
Look, guys, I work on computers all day. There's a chance that I identified with Doug slightly in the fact that I would be Doug in this group if I was going to be. I wouldn't be Lee. I'm not like a tough, smart guy that everybody's going to love and like listen to. I would be the dude that's like, I rigged a calculator to tell us if a zombie's nearby, and everybody would be like, that's awesome, and I'd be like, that's all I can contribute, thank you everybody, and like walk away. So that's why I had Doug. All right, that's the real answer. Okay,
can I tell you guys another story about this particular decision?
What?
Yes.
So if you think back now to the Karate Kid Part 2, when Mr. Miyagi has a chance to kill the evil leader of the Cobra Kai dojo. You remember what I'm talking about? And he punches the windows and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And Daniel's like, why didn't you kill him? And Mr. Maggio says, because, Daniel, for a man with no forgiveness in heart, life worse punishment than death. I made her come with us.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you really?
I sure did.
I left
Was
her
she
out.
There? Did she stay throughout the story?
She ended up stealing the camper.
Really smart there, Scott. Super smart.
Hey.
When did she steal the camper?
When we were trying to fix the train.
Oh, okay. So it's the same. I mean, I was really interested to see how they brought stories back in when you did something, you know, different. So that's interesting.
But seriously, she just killed somebody. So I was just going to make her sit on that bus and stare at us until it drove her crazy. And
there
it did.
Is like additional dialogue. If you keep her around, now you have like extra conversations with her and stuff that you wouldn't have if you left her on the side of the road. So
yeah, I didn't want to talk to her. She killed Carly. Yeah.
I didn't want her on the train with Clementine.
Yeah, sure. I don't blame you.
Pretty smart.
She crazy.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the damn kid with the hoodie?
Ben.
Ben. So did you guys?
Yeah. Let's talk about Ben
when he falls, or did you? What was your relationship like with Ben during the game?
How'd you guys deal with Ben?
I got annoyed with Ben because here's the deal with Ben. Ben would be the worst character in the group. Like. Repeatedly.
Oh yeah, same
and, which
game.
Is fine, honestly. You can be the worst guy, like you can be shitty at everything. I don't care about that. What I care about is when you turn around and then complain that you don't get to do the cool stuff because you were like, oh just because I, you know, gave away supplies and then I left Clem to die in a pile of zombies and then I
that was the thing that did it to me, like,
and then
no
I wouldn't
way.
Shoot the,
so did you
the
drop
zombies
him?
That time, like,
oh yeah,
you
oh my god,
I dropped him.
Oh my! You dropped
you guys killed him?
Oh my god!
Dude, he was a
he let go. He said, "I'm gonna let go." I said,
"Yeah,
all right, dude,
no."
See you later.
Yeah.
Said,
he wanted to sacrifice himself. I'm like, "That's the best thing you can do."
Oh goodbye. My god!
No one left behind.
I thought it was just a trick. I was like, "I'm gonna keep this kid around long enough," and like just like Hooter and Captain EO at the end, he's finally gonna plug in the space keyboard and we can start.
Oh yeah, did he?
No, he didn't. He fucking died.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said,
and he may have led to the death of another beloved character.
Yeah,
so
that's
we'll
true.
Get to that.
No, they all died anyways. But you can be shitty. Being shitty is not the issue. You can leave Clem in a pile of zombies, which pissed me off to no end. But if you're going to turn around to me 15 minutes later and be like, why can't I go to the thing that dull stuff's, I'm going to punch you because you're going to be obnoxious. That's annoying. You're not good at stuff. That's why you're not doing the things that are fun. Sorry.
No, I mean, he was definitely an annoying character. I think that's what his purpose was in this story, to see kind of what happens when you introduce someone who's incredibly weak into the group. Because everyone, you know, there were characters that were unraveling, there were characters that were crazy, but he was just weak and terrified. And so it's kind of a good look at human weakness and kind of would also examine what how a player reacts to that. Do you keep giving him chance after chance and run the risk that he's going to kill everyone?
Apparently not.
Yeah. Or do you drop him to his death? And I gave him the chance.
Hey, the thing is, he was basically, I didn't drop him. It's not like you make it sound like I was holding him and I was just like, fuck him and threw him. Like, that was his reclamation, was him saying, you know, I shouldn't be here. Just let go of me. This is my chance to be the guy that gets you away. Like, I'm giving you time. Let go of me.
Well, and here's the thing, too.
I'm serious. He let go. I get it.
Yeah.
He totally screwed me over when it came to Clementine. So in payment for that, because it's going to allow Clementine to get away, because my main priority in this game was to teach and defend Clementine. So, I'm a fierce mama. Like, that's it, right? So, like, him saying I'm going to sacrifice myself, I'm like, yes, you are. Because it allowed
you
her
get the salt
get
lick.
Yeah. Yeah. I had no qualms about that. I was like, good for you. You're finally doing something valuable.
You could have just pulled him up and eaten him. That would have been a better use of his time.
Eaten him?
Yeah, I don't know what that means. And also, like
eaten him. You could have killed him and eaten him, like the Crawfords.
I think the better...
Okay, I'm not a Crawford.
You kind of are. I think the better character.
I will say really quickly, I'm not a Crawford because I believe in protecting Clementine. And didn't the Crawfords get rid of all children and old people?
I'll give you that. That is the one that makes Crawford. But so far, every other one of your decisions has been, he's weak, kill him. I actually liked, and I'm blanking on his name, the homeless guy, better than Molly.
Oh, really? Yeah. Hobo Joe, whatever his
Hobo
name
Hobo Joe, whatever his
Val?
Name was.
I don't know.
He was great. But he's the one that you know, tells you, like, hey, you need to teach this girl to survive. Like, I thought that was a great moment. I thought it was really, I thought it was well done. I thought it was a likable character. And
that's when shit gets real, you
got
know?
Eaten. Yeah.
When you had to cut her hair and all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. I like that scene a lot.
Did you guys cut your arm off?
Nope.
No. Yep.
I did.
Totally.
I totally did.
Totally.
Why did you not cut your arm off?
Because if this was a real world and not a video game that you knew you could get to an end to, if you chop your fucking arm off in the middle of a hospital with no anything, you were going to bleed to death. There is no out of that. There is no, I might survive this. No, you're not. You chopped your arm off. There are major arteries and veins that run through your arm. You are going to bleed to death. There's
Man,
no.
If like James Franco can do there. It.
No, you can't. You're going to die. You're going to die. I'm sorry you're going to die, but it's going to happen. You're going to die. And I thought, if I'm going to keep Clem alive, I know I have time. Like, the fucking little kid lived for like 3 days without dying. I've got to have at least a day in me before I'm going to die. I got a tiny little snip on my wrist. I knew I was going to live.
So how did that go for you with that arm?
Totally fine. And this is the thing. This is where the game breaks. Because from that point on, everything I did not involve the use of my left arm.
Oh, okay, so they only animated one thing. Okay.
Interesting.
And that was the first time in the game that I made an alternate decision and noticed that they were like crutching the game essentially to make me get to where I needed to go. Because
I think
the
game
story
that you want with these branching storylines is Heavy Rain, but I don't think that you would play that game because of the tension involved in the game.
I actually want to play. It made me want to play Heavy Rain.
You know who else should play Heavy Rain? Nate. You should play Heavy Rain. Nate, put the game in your console and play it right now. Okay.
I think he'll be listening to this because he's only done episode one.
You want to play Heavy Rain, in all honesty, because it did make me realize that that's what I want, is that there were plenty of times when I died as a character, and like, this is kind of reviewy, so sorry I'm bringing it up now, but like, there were times when I died from whatever, you know, like I didn't shoot correctly or whatever stupid glitchy thing happened that didn't work, or I fucked up and just didn't play it well enough, but like that would happen and I would die, and then you just immediately come back right there, And like that was frustrating to me because it was like, well, I have no alternative to dying here. Like I have to kill these five zombies. You know what I mean? Like there's no way through the story. So all it is, and I understand why they're doing it, because if otherwise all I was doing was clicking narrative decisions the whole time, that's less of an engaging game. But at the same time, it annoyed me that, like, you know what I mean? It just didn't feel, it felt video gamey then and less like story narrative. Like I died and it was like, well, you're not dead, come back, do it right. And you're like, well, I didn't do it right again. And like, well, come back, do it right. And you're like, well, then just move me through it. Like if the only option is me surviving, then just let me survive and move me to the next point, because I'm doing horribly at this part, you know?
Sure.
So let's get to the end here, because I think the captor stuff is interesting, but the decisions really mean almost nothing, because it ends the same exact way, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Did you kill a stranger or Clem?
Oh, me? I beat him to death mercilessly with my bare hands.
I think Clem killed him.
Clem killed him for me too.
Yep.
Yeah, she gets him.
I punched him to death.
Which I think is
a poignant, great moment. But let's get back to this cutting your arm off. You guys all died anyways, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just left him. He died.
You died?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I left him. No, he didn't die. I left him. He could be alive. He's just bleeding out from his arm, right? Is that why? Were you bleeding out?
I don't know.
No, I turned. I was turning.
Why did you turn? Because you got bit?
Because I got bit.
Yeah, you still start to feel the effects of...
So what you're saying is you could have kept your arm and had the same story.
Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
Probably.
So I made the right decision is what I'm saying.
Whatever. Did you have Clem kill you, or did you just tell her to leave you?
Bullets.
I do too.
So wait, 63% of the community told Clem to shoot Lee before he turned. None of us did that?
Brutal. That's brutal.
No. Yeah, I didn't do that either.
I didn't for multiple reasons. One, I'm putting her life in danger. And two, I don't need her to kill me. That's horrible. She just saw her dead parents outside like a minute and a half ago. I'm going to have her shoot her other dad in the head.
I thought shooting would make noise. He was already handcuffed to the radiator, you know?
It didn't really make much sense. And also, I'm going to be honest, and you guys are going to laugh about this, but there was this little thing in the back of my mind that I was like, well, maybe Lee just has the flu. And maybe he just doesn't feel good, and he'll black out, and he'll wake up, and everything will be fine. That's kind of what I was thinking.
I mean, to be honest, I agree with you. I left him alive just to keep as many story options open as possible.
Yeah.
I didn't cut my arm off, so. He's dead. There's no way they're bringing him back.
No, they're not.
I'm fully aware of that. But in my fake little narrative that I have in my mind, he breaks the handcuffs, runs free into the forest.
So this leads me into an interesting question. Did you guys like Lee?
I loved Lee. I thought he was a great character.
No, I was all right with him.
He was all right.
I think it was one of the reasons I didn't get into the game. I did not like Lee. Yeah. I don't know. It just really didn't. It wasn't a character that clicked with me at the end of the day. I clicked with other characters in this. Like, as a blank slate guy, I guess I kind of clicked with him. But for some reason, I just never felt like...
You never felt like you were Lee?
Yeah, even though I was choosing the stuff he was doing. I think that the timed decisions was the greatest innovation this game has brought to narrative-driven games where you can change stuff. Because it takes you out of that game mode where you can sit back and think about what might happen and how you can affect the game. And it puts you into what is your gut check. Every time you saw something, you made a gut check to do a decision. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Heavy Rain had that too, but I think they brought this into this particular genre specifically.
Right. Well, I haven't played Heavy Rain, so I can't comment on Heavy Rain. But it made it feel like in the tense situation that it was tense, if that makes sense.
No, they did a great job of creating tension in that way. And I thought, like, the visceral nature of the story, like, kind of kept the shit real and kept you from playing the game like a first-person shooter, you know?
So if something like that timed effect had been in a game like Mass Effect or Dragon Age, do you think that it would change how you played?
Yeah,
I think with that Renegade and Paragon stuff, it started to approach something like that, but not in the, you know, obviously not the dialogue.
Well, I mean, like, let's say you have a split second decision on who you're going to save, Ashley or Caden. You know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff is like,
oh my God, I would have saved Ashley so much faster than Caden. Than I already did.
Yeah. It becomes a gut check before it becomes, you know,
no, you're right.
Like you're going to blow up the collectorship or you're going to keep it. You know, like those big decisions that you thought about for a little bit when you did them in Mass Effect became more of a game to me because you got to think about them.
That would have to be something that could be turned off in the options menu, because I think some people would flip their shit about that.
And I think
absolutely.
But I feel like that's what the discussion I wanted to, we can briefly have now is that, does it affect, like, does that mean that this game gets viewed through a different scope than a game like that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a great thing. I think these kinds of things should, I mean, I like the timers when appropriate. And I think in a game like this for dialogue, it is appropriate, you know? So I think it works, you know?
But it's just, it's an interesting thing to me because the thing I always fight with people over Mass Effect in is that I play Mass Effect like a role-playing game. And I feel like most people don't. They play it like a gaming system and they say, well, I'm going to be good. And I'm going to play, I'll just choose all the good options because I know I'm going to be good and that's what I want to do. And it's like, well, then you're not playing a game. You're just, you're gaming the system essentially to get an outcome that you want to have as opposed to playing it as a role-playing game.
Well, the thing with like Dragon Age and Mass Effect is that it's balanced with a lot of really fast combat. So if they added the extra urgency to the dialogue, plus the fact that you are in stressful situations.
In the White House.
What?
Nothing, sorry.
No, I think that would be, I just don't think it goes. Like, I like the opportunity to sit and think about my dialogue choices because I have to be on my toes in combat situations.
I mean, I think aside from that, there's probably one other technical reason why that would be difficult to implement. And that's because that in The Walking Dead, if you don't make a decision, usually your default option is like silence. So I don't know, like it might be hard to implement a silence option for every choice, like in like a Mass Effect kind of game.
So that's the other thing is that I think what LA Noir had a silence option, right?
It's been a while. Yeah. I totally don't remember.
That was timed, wasn't it? When you had to say if you thought somebody was lying or not, wasn't there a timer on that or was there not?
Yeah, right. I think there was.
Didn't the silence option default you to, it defaulted you to a decision, essentially.
I guess it did.
Whereas the silence option here left you in that weird gray area that characters would start calling you on.
Did you guys ever get to that? I never got to a point where I just didn't push a button. Did anyone ever do that?
Did a couple times.
I wanted to hurt myself when I played that game, so I stopped.
No, I'm talking about The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah. Walking Dead. I always made a decision. I never let it time out, but I have heard that the default is silence. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did it a couple times where I stayed silent.
And thought it was the right time.
During the first or second chapter, Kenny calls me out on it. I don't know if he does it with you guys, but it's after I don't kill second chapter. It's after I don't kill Larry. He yells at me for always being like non-committal. And it actually affected me. Like in the story, I was like, oh shit, am I really not making decisions? And I guess I was always choosing, I was either staying silent or choosing the option that was kind of like, maybe we should just talk about this, guys.
Yeah, they don't like it if you waffle.
Yeah, I was really like, I think I was really waffly with him, and he got mad about it and yelled at me about it in the game, which I thought was interesting. But I thought that silence option was amazing. I thought they treated it well, like a real option and not like a default to like, oh, he's lying, or you know what I mean? Like it didn't feel like it defaulted to one of the other decisions.
I think there's room in the gaming universe for both systems, but it, like Matt said, I really did appreciate the innovation with the speed of the choosing and the fact that it was timed. I think made a huge difference and added to the urgency of the whole situation. So I liked it a lot. Would I like to see it necessarily in Mass Effect? Probably not, because I think Mass Effect is more of a game about stat building and min-maxing your character and making the exact right decisions and forging your narrative. You know, at least it was, yeah. So I think it's fine the way it is.
I think I play Mass Effect very differently. I just don't, min-maxing is like not even in my vocab. Like I don't really, I don't know. It's just a different game to me, I guess. I don't know. But needless to say, if somehow you have avoided Mass Effect, good Lord, brain melt. if you have avoided Walking Dead, you know, even with my review of me saying, like, just first of all, don't buy the disc. Just go download it. You don't need the disc. Just download the game. Play the downloaded version. And second of all, my kind of like, you know, I don't enjoy stressful games. I still walked, it's one of those games I walked away from thinking about for days. You know what I mean? Like, every time I ended a chapter, or I, especially when I finished the game, all I could think about was like, oh, you know, what about this? Or what if I did that? Or this is a really interesting way they did this in the story. Or this is, it's just a very thought provoking game, and I can't recommend it highly enough, even though I don't like stressful games necessarily. So there you go. We'll talk about storytelling again at another time. But right now we're going to take a break and come back hopefully with an Aquato, even though we went way over Scott's time for us. So we'll be back in just a minute.
All right, we are back with our Nerd Appropriate Question of the Week. This week's question was, what woefully overlooked franchise, character, or genre do you think we need to see more of in the future? And we have a number of really amazing responses from you guys in our community. And as always, thank you all so much for actually taking the time to respond to our answers. So let's see what you kind of want to see more of in the future. We definitely have a wide variety of stuff this week, so I'm excited to talk about it.
Although I feel like there's a particular theme as well that will start to emerge.
There's a lot of strategy here, which is cool. But anyway, first off is Cassidy Richardson, who is at TFox on Twitter. And she says she wants to see more of Final Fantasy Tactics, Ramza Baluv, Battletoads, or anything with combat like Dragon's Dogma. Although I don't know what Ramza Baluv is, I love, love, love Final Fantasy Tactics, and I was actually thinking about this game the other day and how badly I would love to see a remake of the original Final Fantasy Tactics, because I played the shit out of that game on PlayStation. I absolutely loved it. Battletoads, it's been a while.
What if Battletoads was remade in the vision of Dragon's Dogma? Would that be okay?
No, that's not.
Would you have pawns?
Like, I don't want those two mixing. That's kind of like mixing gasoline and
butterscotch.
Visine. I don't know why I said visine.
Just make napalm.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, I love anything with combat like Dragon's Dogma. In terms of RPGs, I think that was just had phenomenal, phenomenal combat. So I agree with you, Cassidy. And of course, thanks for replying.
I think with Battletoads, it's like it's hard to go back sometimes. You know, sometimes you want to keep that memory as you have it from playing it when you were little and not necessarily replay it as an adult.
Battletoads were like ghetto Ninja Turtles. I wasn't into it.
Yeah. difficult Sega game.
Bethany Westmoreland at HemiArt. Hey, Bethany says, I'd like to play a proper rehash expansion of Xenogears. I think there was Xenogears on the Wii, but I never got a chance to play it.
Yeah. I've been hearing them talk about this on P2R quite a lot, and Xenogears is supposed to be a lot of fun. I never actually played it, but I've been hearing it's amazing.
Denise Kwan at Denise Kwan says, Advance Wars Dual Strike needs an update or something. And I agree. Advance Wars is a fantastic game.
Yes.
Strategy.
I love it.
Strategy.
Turn-based strategy, and I love Dual Strike, so I'm with you on this one as well.
It's fantastic.
Tiffany Peters at T-Bird says Alpha Protocol. And just the way that she wrote it makes me think that that's how she's saying it. Alpha Protocol.
Which was an Obsidian game that was a piece of doo-doo. but, I mean, it had so much potential. It was supposed to be a Mass Effect style game set in the spy universe, and everybody would love that.
It was supposed to be Mass Effect mixed with, like, what's the Tom Clancy? Splinter Cell, right?
Yeah, or James Bond. I mean, you know. Yep. And so the potential for that was great, but I guess the game wasn't very well finished. It wasn't actually done.
Womp womp. Yeah. Like KOTOR 2.
Oh.
Oh. That's too low.
I just joined in on those, that's all.
So this next one kind of starts off the trend that I'm seeing. Do you want me to say it?
Yeah.
You can actually, we put all three together. You could name all three people.
We put them all together.
Oh, all right. So Ritzy at Ritzy Fox. Also Jacques LeBlond at Archangel. Natalie, who's an awesome friend of our site, amazing, Stumpy Nat. All of them say Jade Empire. So yes. Pretty awesome.
And they all say it in their own way, which is nice.
They do. I particularly like Natalie's coughs. Jade Empire.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, our buds over at Presta Reset are playing Jade Empire on Twitch TV. So check that out. Let's start this revival. I'd like to see new Jade Empire as well.
I would, and I wouldn't. I kind of want to see a new IP. No offense to Jade Empire. I mean, I think it's great that everyone's playing Jade Empire and getting back into Jade Empire. And the fact that there's now, you know, that they have it on Steam and they have it on, you know, live and things like that. But I want to see what's kind of next from BioWare.
I bought one of you Jade Empire, didn't I?
You bought me Jade Empire.
I got it for you. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Well, Ash, what would be your answer to this question? Since you don't necessarily want a Jade Empire.
I want to see Harmonix do Toe Jam and Earl.
What?
Oh, wow. That's what I'm talking about. And for all of you that are old, like...
Mind blown.
Yep. Harmonix do Toe Jam and Earl. Toe Jam and Earl, for those of you who are like, what the fuck is this guy talking about?
That was an amazing Genesis game.
A Genesis game. It was about space exploration, and you play these two aliens... And it's all about like rapping and doing all these sweet rap battles up in space and exploring these cool levels. And you get all these awesome gadgets. I think if anyone on the planet was going to do like a beat matching or like music based game, it would have to be Harmonix. And I think they could do really wonderful things with this IP. So that would be my dream, to bring back Toe Jam and Earl, because it's honestly probably been 15 years since that. If not more, God, I want to say maybe 20 years since that title had any sort of updates at all.
It's amazing.
Oh my God, guys, I just realized that I've always been like, I own a Windows phone right now, and Android and iPhone are like the big deal. I had an Android phone when iPhone was the big deal. I had a Genesis when Nintendo was a big deal.
I know.
You're always around the curve somewhere.
That guy.
All right. So Eric at eChap33. Says turn-based strategy games. XCOM brought back fun memories of Final Fantasy Tactics, and I'd love more of it. And I agree.
I agree
wholeheartedly.
Really, pick up Rad Soldiers, Eric. You'll love it. Promise.
Brandon Kormeyer, I think I got that right. B Kormeyer 53 says, "I would like to see more westerns, film, TV, and games." That's
like
really
this.
Interesting because we didn't. I don't think we just said games, but. I think I agree now that I see this response.
You guys seen Django yet?
I've not.
No.
Holy fuck, it is so good.
Does that scratch that itch?
Oh my God, yeah.
We have to temper this. You are a gigantic Tarantino fan.
Yeah, absolutely. For a very, very long time. But even if I wasn't, and I know all sorts of people that have seen the movie that aren't huge Tarantino fans. It is just a phenomenal film.
Okay.
And
it's
actually,
up for Best Picture.
Is it good? He actually won the Golden Globe for best screenplay last night. So it you know, even if you don't like Tarantino and you think he's pretentious or what have you, it is a great film. And I agree. I think the Western genre is awesome. I loved Red Dead Redemption. I would love to see more Western-based games. So I agree. And I think this might be Brandon's first time writing at us. So thanks for writing at us, Brandon.
Awesome. I liked his answer.
I did too.
Approved. God. So Nate Hales, since no one's reading, nHales80 says two answers. Well, sorry, Nate, you only get one. I'm only going to read one of them.
Oh, man, brutal.
Come on.
But he's a friend of ours.
Valkyria Chronicles.
You're not going to read the other one.
It's the Chrono series. These are fantastic story gameplay.
Oh, you jerk. He can't answer two tweets next time, Nate. Two tweets. Sorry. No, that's I agree on both of these. Chrono Trigger was one of the first like Final Fantasy style RPGs that I got like super into. I was never big into Final Fantasy for whatever reason, and Chrono Trigger was fantastic.
How about just a game that had more team attacks in it? Could you imagine playing a game like Borderlands 2 and then finding out that like two or three or four people could put together some kind of super attack in that game? It would be incredible.
Agreed.
Yeah. Agreed.
Agreed.
And Valkyria Chronicles, good times, right?
Oh, absolutely.
That's Ash, yeah.
Again, another turn-based strategy. And if you guys have not touched this yet, those of you on the podcast, pick it up. I mean, PS3 only, but absolutely worth it. If you have a PS3, this is the one the absolute one must-own title for that system.
Yeah, it was your number one recommendation for me when I got the PS3. You were like, go get Valkyria Chronicles.
Yeah.
Which I haven't done yet. It's on a list generally.
It's the way it's cheap right now on Amazon. I think it's like $20 or $30. So.
Awesome.
Hillary, why don't you tell us your answer to this question before we continue?
Okay, so mine's kind of strange, but you know how when movies come out and a developer will rush a game into production that's based on the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they're usually, you know, not really well made and they're kind of short and not fun. I think that they should spend more time on creating those games so that when you watch a movie that you're really into, you can pick up a title that's just as immersive and robust as like Mass Effect. You know what I mean? Like, I wish they'd spend more time because honestly, when you come out of a movie and you're like completely obsessed with the worlds and the characters, it would be so cool to jump back into it.
Like, if there was a good tie-in game.
Like a good one. Not just like a crappy, like, oh, the movie's release date's this time, so we have to rush this game out. You know what I mean?
So, like, you want a really immersive RPG based on the world of This Is 40.
No, but like, you know, like something like the Hunger Games, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know if there's like a game out or not, but if there is, it's probably not very good.
I don't think.
But so. I mean, I would love to take something like that. You know, like in the past, I bought Harry Potter titles way back in the day when the first Harry Potter movie started coming out, mm-hmm. and they were really bad games. So I think having something that's set in a world where it's just as huge in a world. Yeah, exactly.
In a world.
I would love to have that actually be like a legitimate thing. Because now you see a game title that's the same as a movie and you're like, skip it. So yeah. I would like something that's actually like
Or
really
worse
awesome.
Yet, they'll just retell parts of the movie, which is like, why are you doing that? You know?
I wanna piggyback on go ahead, sorry.
Go ahead. No, no, no.
Oh, I was gonna say I wanna piggyback on your answer because mine was gonna be a comic book game other than Arkham Asylum. That's good. I wish more game makers would like delve into like the Marvel universe and make a viable video game.
Do you remember on this very first podcast that we did, we talked about X-Men.
X-Men. Yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah.
But I had that game.
But Legends. I mean, like, come on.
Legends. Yeah, Legends. It was awful.
Mm-hmm. We were so stoked for that. We thought it was going to be like an RPG, and it just kind of turned out to be a beat 'em up with like some character building elements, and it was like not. Well, we thought it would be.
It was like if you took everything good from Fable and then stripped that out and then made a Marvel game on top of it. And you're like, here you go. Like, this is an awful game. I wish because it's such a deep, I think the movies have proven that it is such a deep universe that there's so much you can do with it. And no one, you know, has successfully at this point done anything with it. So I don't know. Agreed. I wish game makers would spend more time with existing titles that they could make good universes, alternate kind of universes to live in. Cough, mm-hmm. cough, Telltale Games, Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Ouch.
No, I mean, I'm not saying cut down. I'm saying that that's a good thing. Like, that's what they did. They took a title that was, you know, an existing universe and made something awesome out of it without having to make
coexist, right?
They didn't just make a TV show into a game. You know what I mean? Like, they
agree.
So, sorry. Go ahead.
All right. Corianne Campbell at Mrs. Vulture on Twitter says an HD remake of Knights of the Old Republic. Ooh, that's a good one.
I think we're all behind that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I've heard there are a lot of really big updates that have come to Star Wars The Old Republic MMO. So maybe that will scratch your itch. Maybe not. Who knows?
Hillary.
Oh, my turn. Lisa Chan at El Chaco 25. Jade Empire. Again, I guess we missed that in the other one. Also would love to see a proper entry in the Age of Empress and especially mythology IP. On that note, would love to see more Orient/ancient Greek mythology settings. Not everything has to be medieval fantasy, right?
Agreed.
That's awesome.
I love that. There's so many great mythologies in the world that are not God of War because fuck that title.
No, but that, I like how she lays that out. It makes a very strong point. I think that she's right on the money there.
Mm-hmm. Scott, what was that game that we used to always sit around and play that's had like 9 titles put out? It's set in an ancient like China. It was kind of hack and slashy.
Dynasty Warriors.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, what a crazy
ass
game that
was. You guys should never admit that you played a lot of Dynasty Warriors. It is not something.
you just glaze over as you sit in a pile of Funyuns and Mountain Dew.
Fantastic.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Really? Did you guys really do that?
We played a lot of Dynasty Warriors, yeah.
Probably the first four of them, right?
We would like hand the controller off, you know what I mean? The marathon it, yeah.
We would just marathon that game for whatever reason.
That is literally like the junk food of gaming.
I know.
No redeemable goodness.
Yeah, like Ninja
yeah, but
Blade.
Junk food tastes good.
It does.
That's true. But it'll kill you.
It's just afterwards that you feel bad about it.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Justin Banks at Midtown 583 says, I'd love for a Flash movie to be made and done right. That character has potential for a great film.
He means like when people show their penises, right?
Yes.
Like a movie about flashing.
Oh, no. Yeah,
about Justin, flashing. Why are you such a pervert?
Oh. I think Justin will agree with me here that every person that's going to take on a DC title just needs to find what Geoff Johns wrote about that character and just do a movie based on Geoff Johns' version of it, because that is what should be happening. And he wrote some great Flash stories. So, but, you know, you've always got the TV show, right? Anybody? Nobody? Nobody watch Flash? 1996
Maybe
Flash?
I did.
Hmm. Yeah, I think I did.
Oh, the one with the rubber suit.
Yeah.
Super buff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. And he would have to like eat a lot of hamburgers after he ran. That was a terrible show.
It was a horrible show. So, Ryan at Physics for Poets, good buddy, been on the podcast before, says, go bots. Now, I know he's joking, but this is like the, you know, the little Asian brother of Transformers, right? Or the American?
These are the ones that, like, when you went to Kmart, they would have these, like, in the checkout aisle, and you could maybe, like, squeeze one out of your parents, like, by, like, whining.
GoBots.
They wouldn't buy you a Transformer because Transformers were, like, $8, but a GoBot was, like, $3. You'd be like, I just want a GoBot! And they might buy you a GoBot.
I don't think they transform that well, either.
No, they couldn't.
Always know. It was like the nondescript yellow car.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You were like, what? This doesn't look like Bumblebee. And it wasn't. That's why.
Wow.
Yes. Next up is Melissa K at the Quad Skater from Reset Transmission Podcast. She says, North America needs more Suikoden, like all of it. Suikoden, of course, is the strategy title that Melissa K is obsessed with. And it is, I believe, her favorite title of all time. And I would love, you know, I am, first of all, I'm super happy that there are so many strategy answers on here. And that means we have a really awesome group of listeners. So thank you guys.
Bunch of smarties.
Yes.
Ooh.
They weren't like, we want more Dynasty Warriors.
Hey, look, there were redeeming qualities for Dynasty Warriors.
You could sit down and play it forever.
I mean, it took zero brain power to play for hours on end. It was amazing.
I have a copy of it for my PSP.
Yeah. See? Done.
Can I give my answer now, you guys?
Hmm?
Can I do mine?
Yeah. Scott. Oh, yeah. You didn't go, Scott.
Yeah, you sneaky bastard.
Womp womp. Okay. So I was going to go with the common response and just say no one lives forever. But what I was actually maybe thinking about was, what about like more... like comedy, like funny games. I feel like comedy is hard. You know, I was trying to think of the last game that I played that was supposed to be funny, and that may have been Bulletstorm.
Wait, so like South Park Stick of Truth?
Yes. See, like I think, and I'll probably end up playing that as well. But I would like to see more humorous games. And not humorous like Duke Nukem humorous, but like actual comedy.
You mean like if you're over the age of 13 funny?
Yes.
Yeah. I'd try with that.
I feel like I just played something that was really like sharp, but I honestly can't remember it right now. Sorry.
Because we just basically had a whole podcast about like being gripped with fear and tension and all this, but why not go the opposite direction and like have a few laughs and clown around?
You want like Tom Lennon, Ben Grant written video?
Yes!
Game, right?
Like Reno 911 game? That would
like
be
Night
so
of the Music
cute,
too.
You guys.
I'd be down for that.
Good stuff.
I think that might be the first impression Scott's done of Cartman on South Park.
I was going to say, do you guys know my Anna Schumann is very close to my Cartman? Isn't that amazing?
Oh, I always thought it was just Cartman.
Oh, no. It's a little bit of both at this point.
Amazing.
She's totally going to hate me for that. I'm sorry.
That actually is a really good Anna Schumann.
That was Cartman. No.
Oh, was it?
I think it's a little bit of both. It's hard
confusing.
To tell. Ash, take us home.
So that about wraps things up for episode 88 of the Rated NA podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. As always, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, Goodreads, or you can always find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. Or, of course, go to our website, nerdappropriate.com. We have a couple shout-outs this week. First is, of course, to our good friends at Reset Transmission. Always tune into their podcast. Check them out on iTunes. Give them a rating and give us a rating while you're on iTunes, because we know it's a real big challenge.
Give us a slightly better one, though, right?
Yeah, we definitely want better
rating. Give them 5 stars and give us, like, 5.5.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I think that's fair.
And on theirs, you could be like, needs work, must improve. and on ours you can put you're okay at what you do. That's
Toy Story 2 was okay.
Wow. Toy Story 2 was okay.
And of course, as always, a huge thanks to Jimmy Hinson, who is at Big Giant Circles on Twitter. And he wrote our theme song, and it's absolutely incredible. So we thank him for that as often as we can. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We will be back next week with a brand new episode. I talked for like 9 hours straight today. I'm not okay. 's been this recent outbreak of like the poo-poo bandit at my work, and
what?
So some
what is a poo-poo bandit?
A poo-poo bandit is like when someone, a massive person, takes a shit on the bathroom floor and not in the toilets, and also puts their hands on their hips and urinates in a 360 and just pisses all over the bathroom.
Oh my god.
So we have these signs up that like that say they're like lit, like these really nice, like they're made of tin. And they're like bolted to the wall now. It's like, putting fecal matter on the ground is an offense and you could get in trouble for it.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, that's kind of the fun stuff that I have to contend with. Sometimes you walk into the bathroom and you'll just slide. And you're like, what am I sliding on? You're like, oh, it's human waste. I'm sliding on human waste.